Hi, I'm Kathy Miller, professor of medicine at the Indiana University School of Medicine in Indianapolis. Welcome to Medscape Oncology Insights, coming to you from the floor of the 2017 annual meeting of the American Society of Clinical Oncology. What a difference a year makes. Last year, Vice President Biden attended ASCO to launch a federally funded moonshot to cure cancer. And while we haven't cured cancer yet, we have seen several major developments at this meeting, all of which offer real advances in the control of cancer with less side effects, at least compared to chemotherapy for our patients. But we have a huge problem. They are wickedly expensive, and we need to tackle the cost of healthcare, and particularly how we might be able to get these new therapies to our patients. So I'm joined today by Dr. Peter Bach, writer, physician, epidemiologist, and director of the Center for Health Policy and Outcomes for Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. Peter, I know you've thought about this area a lot.
Yes, I have. It's a really exciting time, and it's posing all sorts of new challenges, not just within the oncology world, but in the healthcare system more generally.
We talk a lot about finding value in our medicines. How do we know when something is of value, when it's a good deal?
Well, it's what we know. It's hard, you know, you can have two answers to that, right? One is a relative one and one is an absolute one. The absolute one's much harder. Like, how much are we willing to divert social resources and tax dollars into healthcare, and in particular into marginally effective therapies, when those dollars could be deployed in other ways, like in education, for example? And that's a really hard policy question. But the narrower question is, well, given that we are going to spend a lot on healthcare, are we allocating our funds appropriately? And that one is a relative question. And that's actually, it's quite easy to see that value is declining. And it's declining very rapidly in a way that almost ensures that what scientific advances we can make will be outstripped by our spending massively. So let me give you a couple of examples. One is, we've been tracking the prices of cancer drugs for, you know, we started about 10 years ago, but we've gone all the way back to the beginning of the Medicare program. And after you adjust for inflation and some other things like a standard dose, the price of cancer drugs at introduction has risen 100-fold since the beginning of Medicare. Now, you could say, well, that's great, we're making progress, but 100 times is a big number. Have we seen that much benefit? And we had a paper a couple years ago now looking at that exact question. And along with that rapid rise of 100-fold over 50 years, we coned in on the most recent 20 years, and we have seen for each new drug that's gotten introduced, the number of life years it delivers per dollar decline by 80%. So it costs five times as much today for a life year, if you will, as it did 20 years ago. The posters are exciting, the survival curves projected on these huge screens are exciting, but they tend to be marginal gains, and there tend to be lots of patients at the beginning of those curves not benefiting. But what we do know is the costs are astronomical, and we cannot sustain the rapid rise of inflation on the cost of prescription drugs, which is rising more quickly than any other area of healthcare spending, and still do the other things we care about.
To make this very simple, the medicines are costing 80 to 100 times as much, but we're not doing 80 to 100 times better.
That's right.
In terms of the patient outcome.
That's right. If patients weren't doing better at all, there would be zero value. But value brings into account both how much patients are benefiting and how much you're paying for those benefits. And that ratio is declining. That's not true in truly innovative industries. That's not true in competitive marketplaces where you can see things both getting better and cheaper, you know, flat screen televisions, for example. But the pharmaceutical industry has government-granted monopoly pricing power and market protection. And so they are able to charge essentially whatever they choose. And so they can ensure that as prices rise, irrespective of the size of their drug's benefits, they can continue to capture more taxpayer dollar and patient dollar. And that's what they're doing.
Focusing only on the drug costs, it's easy. But there are other costs of healthcare utilization. There might be other benefits. Patients who are able to continue working, continue playing their roles in their family, that have some economic benefit or cost to them. Have we at all been able to evaluate those things that are perhaps equally important but tougher to put a number?
No, those are really important things for patients. I mean, to be, you know, a dispassionate economic thinker, those things don't get close to remonetizing the excessive costs of drugs, not even by a log scale or order of magnitude. But no, those are wonderful things that some patients are, or more patients are able to return to work because therapies are less toxic. But, you know, let's face it, that important event happened when the same time we developed supportive care drugs and got patients out of the hospital. That was the pivotal moment in oncology. All of these other things tend to be sort of on the margin.
So how do we address this? Because our drugs are getting better, more effective, marginally so, but if you keep building up marginal advances, you do make progress. And if you continue research, you do sometimes make a larger leap. How do we do that if we can't pay for any of these things?
Well, it's a bit of a false dichotomy, right? Or a false choice you're proposing, right? So you're right. You've characterized, I think, progress in oncology pretty accurately. Years ago, I wrote an essay about a very different topic, but I characterized progress in cancer as a, you know, as a long slog with a poorly functioning compass, right? And I think that's what we see, and that's what we see every year at ASCO. And so we do need those gains, right? A survey of oncology drugs over the last 10 years approved by the FDA, the median improvement in either PFS or OS, whatever the approvable endpoint was 2.2 months. So as we stack those on top of one another, we are improving outcomes for cancer. We've lowered the mortality rate from cancer, primarily through smoking cessation and behavioral interventions, but also through better treatment. And we are making this progress, but the reason we can't afford it is not because progress is so expensive. It's that we have this unusual system where we give monopoly pricing power to the pharmaceutical industry, and because they need to grow revenues, they charge higher prices, and then they raise the prices of drugs even after they're approved. The price of Gleevec is up more than threefold since it launched after adjusting for inflation. It's the exact same tablet, right? But it's because this market is permissive. More and more money continues to flow through Gleevec to Novartis. Meanwhile, the price of Gleevec launched lower in France than it did in the U.S. and has declined in France. So it is not that these are forces of nature we must confront. We have a broken market where monopoly pricing power has led companies to be able to extract maximum dollar. And that is what's causing the crisis, not the challenges of science. Those are evergreen.
So if you got to make one change in the way our system works, or you would probably argue doesn't work, what would that one change be that might make this more workable?
Well, if I were going to quibble, I wouldn't quibble with the word work. I'd quibble with the word system.
Okay.
So, because I don't think anything...
Fair enough. We don't actually have a system.
Right. This isn't systemness by any stretch. There's no coordination. There's no common goal. Right. So, you know, we have advanced an approach called value-based pricing, where you would price drugs in oncology based on how well they work and other features of them, how rare or common the disease is, what the population health burden is another way to think about it. You could pay more for drugs that were scientifically innovative, which means paying less for ones that aren't. But we have created a platform where that kind of approach could be pursued. The drug abacus that's on our website is a version of that thought experiment, if you will, and also laid out a variety of policies that would attach to value-based pricing. So drugs that had appropriate value-based prices, so their prices would be low if they didn't work well or were very toxic, and high if they did work well or had good side effect profiles. Once they have those prices, they would be included in insurance and they would have low co-payments and patients would have ready access to them, which is the problem we have. A recent study showed that of the 9 sort of most economically developed countries in the world, including us, we spend the most on cancer drugs per diagnosed cancer patient, and we have the worst access to treatment of any diagnosed cancer patient. And that's because of our system, or lack of system, and the fact that prices are 2 to 3 times higher here in the U.S. than any other country.
Is this a problem unique to oncology, or do you see these same pricing issues and a disconnect between price and value across medical fields?
It's fairly unusual. Oncology has sort of led the way, and every year except 2014, where we had the Hep C spike, the increase in spending by some specialty category has been dominated by oncology. So cancer is special. It seems politically dicey to object to cancer drug prices. And the cancer landscape is such that lobbyists have managed to write into the law that Medicare must cover every cancer drug, not only based on what the FDA says the drug works on, but also on compendia. So if something is listed in the NCCN, Medicare must cover it. In most states in the United States, state insurance is regulated by similar laws that have been passed by lobbyists from the pharmaceutical industry. And so once you have a market where every payer who either is required or wants to participate must pay for every cancer drug, you have no natural check on prices. And oncology is pretty much alone in that, although other sectors are starting to follow along. Connective tissue disease space is coming along in that sense. Treatments for diabetes, even regular old insulin, have seen huge price hikes. The tricks of the trade, if you will, have been passed on to other specialty drug areas.
So if we adopted the value-based pricing, which really makes sense, works better, has less side effects, we'll pay more for that. Doesn't work very well, makes you sick, we're not going to pay so much for that. And what does that do to the total cost for our patients or the total cost of cancer care?
The idea is to true up the prices so they match the therapies and how well they work. We don't have a market. People say this is a free market. This fails like the first lecture in free market economics, right? There's asymmetry of information, there's monopolies, it's over, right? It's not a free market. And so we need to find a way that if you come on the market, you don't drive revenue by better marketing or by suing your competitor, but you drive revenue by having a better product. And that's how the regular marketplace works. That's how competition works. And we can achieve that if we use value-based pricing.
How much of this problem and this unusual incentive is facilitated by patients and the physicians who prescribe these drugs really not knowing what does this drug cost?
I'm not a fan of having doctors make discretionary choices regarding who gets what based on price. And that may seem counter to many of the trends right now, but I worry a lot about inequities, and I worry that we have a couple of decades of research suggesting that doctors differentially treat their patients already based on basic features, like what they expect the patient understands, what the level of medical literacy the patient has is, even based on race or gender. So I don't want to add rationing to the suite of things that could be inequitably distributed. The problem is not that we need to cut back on our use of effective drugs. The problem is we need effective drugs to have appropriate prices, and then we should have access like they do in every European country. They have solved these problems, and they spend half as much on healthcare as we do. And the companies that are marketing their products for 2 to 3 times as much in the US as they are in those other countries are still selling them in those other countries. They can make it work at those lower price points.
So I wasn't suggesting that physicians make decisions based on the cost, though in some ways we already do, but in a perverse way, because of differences in what you prescribe
change. Well, we have incentives to use more expensive drugs.
The outcome in ways that favor your practice rather than your patient. But we already ration access to these things by where you live, who your doctor is, where you work, what insurance you have. I guess I was thinking more that if the physicians and the patients are not aware of the true cost that we are all paying for these medicines, that they can't join you in their outrage to try to change the pricing structure and get to something that most might agree is more reasonable.
Oh, that I agree that, I mean, I'm certainly not the only doctor out there noting that prices are leading to lack of access. There's been a large number of people in the oncology community who have raised concerns about this issue. And there is a patient group that is not funded by the pharmaceutical industry that is focused on pricing as well. It's patients for affordable drugs. But something like 85% of patient groups are actually funded by the industry. And even if they don't support the pricing practices, they're generally mute on it because a major funding stream comes from there. So I do think this is a major problem that will take political action. During the presidential campaign, both Secretary Clinton and now President Trump said that prices were too high and we needed the government to do something about it. We'll see how that plays out.
Well, Peter, thank you very much for coming in and taking us through this difficult topic. And to you, our listeners, thank you for joining us today. This is Dr. Kathy Miller reporting from ASCO 2017.